Welcome to Coach Your Brains Out, the show that explores learning from the top minds in volleyball and beyond. With your hosts, John Mayer, Billy Allen, Andrew Fuller, and Nils Nielsen.
We're excited to welcome to the show the USA National Team coaching consultant, Chris Clements. Chris, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me.
So you spent a number of years as the head coach of USA field hockey for the national team. What led you to leave coaching to take on this role of coaching coaches?
Well, my career, first of all, started in education. So it was kind of funny how when I was young, I wanted to be a PE teacher. So I followed that dream and path right throughout my playing and coaching career as well, and really got deep into education and learning and development through the early stage of my professional career. So the studying there, and I really enjoyed the classroom stuff, but then I sort of leaned towards coaching because for various reasons. But now with essentially where I got to with the US team, I had sort of had 5 years at the helm and felt I'd done a good job of getting things done that I wanted to get done. So it was more that, and the opportunity came about really from John Crawley at the USOPC, looking at what it was through various discussions that we'd been having around performance and coaching. So what it was I've been doing and trying out with or working on with the US athletes that, well, one I liked and he sort of gravitated towards. So therefore they sort of created a role that I liked the sound of. So for me, it was a great transition. It was an easy transition actually, because there was something there for me to move on from immediately from within with the time that I was with the US team. So essentially it was the role that was created and something that I was intrigued by and wanted to go back and look into.
Nice. And then what were some of the things you've taken from your coaching journey and now that you use in your current role?
I've probably learned some things that if I was to go back into coaching, I'd do a little bit differently.
Yeah, but
just to touch on those briefly would be, it is now that I'm trying to help coaches see is that it's not until you step out and away, you know, for example, if you're able to take a 6 month sabbatical and just take a bit of a break, but keep a hand in the pot or an eye on what's going on, and to realize that a lot of the stuff that we focus on or sometimes spend a lot of energy on doesn't really matter as much as what we make of it. You know, we sometimes can make a mountain out of a molehill. So helping coaches identify moments that they're doing that would probably be one of my biggest takeaways, because I know I spend a lot of time and energy doing things till all hours of the night when really maybe it's my own expectations and my own thoughts that this is really important, but no one really knew about it really at the end of the day when I was in front of the athletes and working on some things. So it was about maybe cutting myself a little bit more slack, and that's not to be lazy. It was more that, okay, you're doing a good job. This is good stuff. We don't need to keep diving into this any deeper than what you are currently.
So you got in there. Our topic today is coaching coaches, which is an important topic as coaches often give a lot of feedback, but don't really get much. I think we're like everyone in the coaching community is living in that reality. Do you find that coaches are sometimes resistant to receiving coaching advice, or do they take it personally, or has everyone just been like, yeah, bring it on, Chris, like tell me everything?
It's a blend of all three. And even with when I go into NGBs that might be fired up to have this type of work done for, you know, essentially it's professional development, right? And what do we culturally and normally do for professional development in the coaching world is that there'll be sort of like a national symposium or get together, and we'll talk a lot about X's and O's. There might be some keynote speakers and some other topics that are covered that are helpful to us as coaches. But where the rubber hits the road has been having that real growth mindset, and as a coach being willing to be vulnerable. And ultimately one of our taglines that I say in one of the first conversations to give the coaches a heads up is to ask them, like, how big is the microscope that you put on your players on a day-to-day basis? And how good are you at looking through that lens and giving them absolutely everything under the sun to get better? And then I basically say, well, how much of a lens do you look through it yourself? And that sort of, there's a bit of a pause and thoughts. And then they're sort of like, well, why, what do you mean? I said, well, who's making you better? And how are you going about through that process? And so I think as coaches, we're all very confident, right? And we feel that things are typically going pretty well. Results tend to probably hide that and don't necessarily highlight our skills, because you could have a great coach working with some athletes that aren't that great, but who really knows, because they're not getting the results. Do you really know that coach isn't great? But actually they are. And you could have a coach as not so great, but working with some great athletes. So there's sort of a bit of a hidden piece to it there in terms of actually what is it that the coach does and how good are they at it? So to answer your question directly, there's a blend. It depends on the relationship. I have to work hard at building a relationship and a bond with the coaches. And really, because sometimes they feel like they're being audited. Sometimes it's like an evaluation process versus I just want to come and support or provide that support that one, I didn't have as a coach myself, but I could see the value in that. And with the experiences that we've had with coaches and in terms of where I'm at now, 5 years in of specifically doing this role within the USOPC and the conversations that I'm having with coaches, you know, I didn't dream of them being able to happen. And the coaches probably didn't even think that they were even relevant to them to be able to where we are now in our conversations, what we talk about, their performance as a coach in front of the athletes. And the needle has shifted quite considerably with all of them. And I can say that they've been very thankful of that support, because it's not just about being better. It's being there for someone that in the coaching space, it's a lonely world. There's a lot of pressure. There's a lot of expectations. It's a lot of work. But to have someone that's there in your corner, because sometimes within the organizations that it can be hard for a coach to go to people to lean on them for help.
Chris, we're ready. Tear us to shreds here. We trust you. We're all in here. I think we'll get a chance to dig into a lot of different kind of mistakes or areas for improvement for coaches. But what stands out as the most prevalent ones that come up in this process of coaching coaches?
I would say that within coaching philosophies, and if coaches don't have a firm coaching philosophy and then have articulated that to their audience and then go and try and deliver upon that, would be the first thing. So that if I say I'm going to be this type of coach, or these are my values and these are my beliefs, this is my knowledge, this is my skill set, and really having a clear awareness of what my skill set is, and then now how do I go and deliver that? And is my team or my athletes and my coaches holding me to that? Am I holding myself to that for starters? Probably one we're maybe not as clear as what we could be with that. We've probably all thought about it. We probably have ideas. We probably have coaches that we'd like to coach like or be like. But I think until we really get that dialed in, then we're limiting ourselves because we're not exploring where we're at as coaches in front of the athletes. And then to build off of that, there's probably just some communication things is where I feel as coaches, we hold the cards and we typically hold the cards very closely to our chest. So if it's about what's going on in training today, if it's the fact that you've done an explanation to the athletes, within that, we'll typically say, hey, this is what I've got planned for training today. This is what we're going to do. Does that make sense? And typically, no one really says much as, okay, sure. But I mean, how much of that did we really retain? How much of that conversation were we engaged in and preparing? So there's just some things that we could do a better job. And again, this is philosophically for me that I would say, right, so Andrew, based on what I just explained to you about how training's going to go, what do you see as the two main objectives for today? And then if we're not on the same page, then we're not going to be on right off the bat at the intro, then we're not going to be on the same page when we get into the activities and the heat of the battle, you know, 45 minutes into training. So that would be the two main things, probably the philosophy and then the communication, because we hijack athletes all the time. You've thought about it for a couple of hours, you've watched film, you've got a master plan, and then you rattle off in 3 or 4 minutes at the start of training what's going to go down or an activity. And now you're asking a young growing mind to absorb all of that and then go and perform. That's not that easy.
So you would share the objective, and then to make sure it got across, you kind of ask the group, like, okay, what did you guys hear? Is that the execution?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I call it checking for understanding. Mm-hmm. And then
John does interrogations.
Yes, no, I've seen John, and actually he's very good with his questioning techniques and his strategy. So he knows what he's on about there. I mean, that check for understanding is an interesting one, because I think as coaches, it puts, we're vulnerable at that point, because that is a check for how good a job did I do in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And we're expecting, if it's 2 athletes, if it's 20 athletes, all to have got that. But that's not going to happen. Let's be realistic about that. So, you know, Andrew's the star player. He's got a great volleyball IQ. He's going to probably answer all my questions. He's hanging from a thread on every word that I'm saying, right? Versus someone else.
Billy.
Okay, we're going to throw Billy under the bus. All right. Could be just, you know, all right, I picked up that we're doing serving, but I didn't pick up in the intricacies that you're really wanting us to work on. So just give me a ball and I'll get it, have at it. Mm-hmm. So it's about, well, do I only engage with my star pupils essentially, or what are some other things that I can do that all of a sudden, hey guys, put your hand up if you can feel confident in sharing back to the group what it is we're working on. And again, personalities and so forth, it's only going to be 2 or 3 that are confident enough. And because, especially of how I react, if Billy gets it wrong, then Billy's never going to want to put his hand up again, and neither's Tom and Sally and whoever, right? So at that point, it's like, hey, what I want you to do, and I've seen John do this, he just says, hey, turn to your partner and explain to each other what you just heard from me. And so now we've gone from having one coach, we've gone from to you know, quadrupling the number of coaches or more, depending on how many athletes you have, right? And they're hearing it differently, and then they're sharing it differently as well. So long as the main point is in there and how many words they put in around it, I think you're good to go at that point. So yeah, I think having the ability to do that is really, really key.
Yeah. So you mentioned coaches will keep their cards close to their chest and maybe not, you know, share all of it. But then there's the other end of the spectrum where coaches are vomiting on the players and talking for long periods of time. And maybe to explain a drill, they go on and on about it. So I guess, what are some things coaches could be aware of, and maybe some shortcuts so that they can give their athletes more time to play versus listening to them chatting?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think there's a time and a place for a chalk and talk and a walkthrough and a tactical and technical discussion and education on, you know, how it is, if it's some footwork things or so forth. But when we're wanting people to do things, okay, it's finding, to me, the shortcut to that point so they can get going, because my sermon, shall we say, isn't really making a big difference to your actions unless we get you acting. So finding what those shortcuts are, and that depends purely on the level of knowledge of the players that are in front of you. So of course, within a large group, there's going to be variety, but you know, if we've spent time with them, then they're going to be relatively in that ballpark. But then you'll know based off of that where you want to go. And I think also intentionally, how does this training want to look, sound, and feel? So if it's going to be a long and slow one where it's low impact, not a very intense one, but we're going to be using it as a learning and an education hour, then great. There's no need to be banging balls left, right, and center. It's about just exploring some things. It's deliberate. So I've set an intention that today, this is the way training's going to go. So I think we sometimes don't set that before training starts, and then we can start going down rabbit holes and then all of a sudden, oh, we didn't get to do that activity, we didn't get to do this activity because we chewed up some time. And again, those are executive coaching decisions that you can make in the moment, but unless I've made those decisions up front to say, this is how today is going to look, sound, and feel, so this is how I'm going to coach that, and it doesn't matter what the content is, it's about how I'm going to deliver that, I've got to make that right choice as to, okay, I can text them all a quick video clip, and they can go over, grab a drink, take a look at that video clip. Okay, look at that player, you know, receiving serve. Okay, for 30 seconds they're watching one clip, boom, have a drink, come out, hey, what was the main thing you saw? Jump out on the court and show me. Cool, all right, let's go. And we start hitting balls at them. And then we stop after a few minutes and say, well, what did you guys find out? And explore things that way versus me, as you say, word vomiting on them for 3 or 4 minutes, right? You know, I think I don't have a magic number for the time, but I would say that if we go much longer than 2 minutes, we've probably lost them after a minute or so. And especially if at the end, I would also say this. I mean, if you are someone that does speak a lot and you realize that, at least at the end of your piece, say, well, right, what were the 3 main things I was trying to talk about? Mm-hmm. So then, you know, again, whether your time was worth it or not, you're all right, well, they're not listening to me, so I've got to change what I'm doing.
Right. Oh, that's good stuff. So let's say the main objective today is to compete a lot. Like we want to get them, you know, playing volleyball a ton today, but we have an activity, a game that is more complicated. What would you say like the step-by-step there? If I'm going to explain it, is it, you know, I'm at the whiteboard and I go through the scoring system and tell everyone where they are. And then we go to the court and we demo it, or, you know, what would the process be to maybe, you know, get everyone on the same page as quickly as possible?
Sure. Well, to get a couple of steps ahead, I'd say put a good name to the game so they remember it. So that would be the first one. So that we're calling it the California game or whatever we want to call it. Come up with a game and may get them to come up with a name as well. That then it's even better.
Yeah.
So then we don't have to re-explain it all the time.
That's a great call.
I would say that if we sometimes, like, what is it that we want the game to give us? And we sometimes get caught up in if it's rotating of players, the number of balls, where they've been initiated from, that just adds things that they're now having to think about, which has got nothing to do with the main objective of what this game is trying to stress.
Yeah.
So I would say start with a game or the competition, or start with an activity that looks game-like, and then it bleeds into a game. So you just start off small with, okay, this is what we're working on. There's no points, but this is what's going to happen. There's going to be two balls, three balls, and so forth, and gradually add those extra pieces, because the cognitive load, what do they all get dialed up on, is where am I supposed to be next if there's multiple people on the court? Who's serving? Who's receiving? What's the points? What's that versus, hey, we just want to focus on serve-receive here, or playing in or it's a transition type game. And that all goes out the window until they feel more comfortable in the game. So that to me is where we just got to know, hey, this would be the ultimate game we could play at the end of the day. But right now, this we can only play this version of it, and gradually increase as we go along.
Yeah, I've seen so many times where the players' focus of attention is on the number of reps they're supposed to do. And you think as a coach, you spend all this time creating this game that's going to get them to focus on, you know, transition attacking, but because they're, oh, how am I supposed to do three or four? You know, they're not even thinking about what the design of the game.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They're trying to play it because they want to please us. They want to do it right.
Right.
Whereas what we'd rather see is just serve the what'd you say? The transition there, just focus on that. Great. Yeah. That's it. Or if it's set locations, that's the main thing, you know, or set heights, anything versus, okay, there's bonus points and so forth. So once we've got familiar with it, then it's easier to layer on that something else,
right?
Like anything, you know.
Chris, do you think it's better to do things for time, for reps? Does it matter? Does it change?
I would say to be aware of the reps, because it's a bit like if you tell your defender, oh, you should have dived for that one, and we haven't given reps at diving. You know, it's always that. I'll always never forget that. I had a coach once tell me that, well, you're yelling out, tell them to dive. I'm like, yeah. And then the player said, I don't know how. Right. So you're like, oh, all right. So maybe, you know, it's very easy to say, because if you've been there, done that, but if they haven't been there, done that enough. So I would just be aware of, okay, what is it that they need? And therefore, where are we at right now? And I would say that it depends again on what the intention of the session is, but I would just be aware of, hey, if I'm going to set this activity up, I'm going to do it for 10 minutes. Well, you might only be in the actual position doing this thing four times in 10 minutes because of the rotations and so forth. I mean, you guys are pretty lucky with, you know, only having two people on the court, and, you know, max I've seen maybe 8 to 10 people maybe on one court. So you're going to get the frequency should be quite high. So then I would say, is it about having the space for reflection within the activity as well? That if they're able to just take a breather to process what just happened as well. So I think it doesn't really matter, but I think you've just got to be aware of, if we're doing it for this long, this is how many touches they're going to get, and specifically on this one piece of the activity, because that's one thing I do look for is I might just watch you through the rotation, Andrew, and I'm like, okay, we did it for 10 minutes, but Andrew only got to do it four times. So therefore, is that enough? Maybe, but probably not.
I've noticed, Chris, that you've used the word games and activity and not the D word, which most people use is drills, right? Is there a reason for that?
No, and it's kind of funny because I guess it's probably more the way that I see what they provide. You know, in terms of just what an activity is versus a drill. I don't know about semantics, and I haven't really thought about it too much. And I have actually been asked this question before, and I guess it's probably been quite automatic for me, is where I would rather see you in an activity challenged and enjoying it versus, you know, a drill. I think maybe can sounds a little bit more regimented, maybe, if I just think about it right now, straight off the top of my head.
I've been trying to do the same thing. I've tried to take drill out of our, it just seems like, you know, overly structured and repetitive and redundant and boring, where activity feels alive. And I mean, I think those little nuances in your culture make a difference. You know, if, as a player, if I'm going into an activity or a game, like, that's engaging. If I'm going into a drill, it's like,
what do they call it in preschool? An invitation.
There you go.
There we go.
Bunch of invitations.
Yeah.
So, Chris, getting into practice design, you've got a great training process checklist that includes the before, during, and after of each session. Can you take us through some of the main things or the key things that coaches can do before a training session?
Sure. I think we typically know what we're going to work on within any game or sport that we play. We've got, you know, say 6 or 7 buckets of things that we can focus on. So, and just being aware of what that is. So I'd call those a theme. So like defense, offense, transition, those are like 3 quick examples there. So within that, where are we at within our current level of performance? And then, so from that, we want to sort of try and create a bit of an outcome really clear. So we know what we're, the bucket that we're operating in. We've now created an outcome that is clear and concise for the day, that, or even for the activity as well, that provides us as coaches and athletes a bit of direction as to where we're going to go. Now, the thing for me, and I think in typical, most coaches are doing that already, but where I see some things, and particularly when we were talking about and we're building this, the checklist out, was, well, what happens next? Well, if the outcomes aren't that clear, or we don't understand the what, how, and why we're doing this, then we're engaged and we're doing things, but we don't really know why. So adding to that a standard, and by standard, that sounds a little bit rigid, but it's like, at least it's an expectation that I have, because typically as a coach, we would kick something off 5 minutes later, I'd be really annoyed they're not doing it well enough. And that's where a lot of reflection came into, well, did I make it clear what we're trying to do? And where are we at right now? Are we learning this new? Is this old? Have we done this a lot? Or are we about to go into a competition and perform? So now, as you can see, that we're laying, we know the big bucket we're all operating in today. We know that we're trying to, by the end of the session or by the end of this activity, move the needle in our performance. And this is how we're probably going to try and measure that. So whether that's, hey, we're looking for a 7 out of, you know, we're looking at a 60% side out rate here, or a 50%, or we're looking at, you know, you make up that measurement that you guys are going to be comfortable with. Now, that could also be explain, you know, can you explain to me at the end of this session, how does doing this help you get better at that? So it doesn't just have to be on executing the play. It can be on describing and telling me about it, or drawing something on the whiteboard. It could be scenario based and tactical based as well. So themes, outcomes, standards. And then I would say ultimately beyond that is the communication in that is like, hey, how am I going to get this across to them? How am I going to teach them? How are they going to be engaged? And that would be the main thing that I'd look at there. And obviously from that builds in, okay, well, what activities are best for promoting this? What games are great for providing the opportunity to develop this here? And ultimately from that, you should be good to go. And I know for you guys, you typically roll, it depends if you're, sometimes if you're just coaching one team, it's just you. So the roles and responsibilities all fall on you. But I think if we've got multiple coaches on a court or multiple athletes with multiple coaches, we've got to be crystal clear talking about how activity is going to operate before we get into action, because you can see coaches competing with each other or not really knowing and say, well, is Andrew going to tell them about it, or is John going to tell them about it, or is it Billy's turn right now, and Billy doesn't know that it's his turn to step in or to provide the feedback or to lead that activity. So it takes a little bit of work, and it sounds a little bit regimented in a way, but it has a massive impact on the flow and the performance in the training.
Do you think athletes should be included in the planning process, you know, helping decide themes, outcomes, or even the games that you're going to play?
Absolutely. I mean, especially when it comes to if I'm a big advocate of individual development plans that the athletes will write themselves, and I'll write a version myself, and then we'll sort of initially come to an agreement, or they'll bring in their notes on where they think their strengths and weaknesses are, for example, and I'll come to, and then we'll decide on, hey, well, what activity is going to help you when I do give you that individual time, when you are going to train on your own, what to do it and how to go it and so forth, but ultimately them driving that. So now when it comes into the bigger picture of just within the team training and so forth, yes, I think there are times when depending on your situation, if you're coaching a pro team or if you're coaching a collegiate team, for example, or a high school team, I think there's definitely use in involving them, because it's no different to right now how we engage with someone else in a conversation or an activity coach. So are they just showing up to participate and they'll just follow your lead? Or how jacked up do they get when they say, oh yeah, cool, this is the activity we told John we wanted to work on today. This is awesome. We're going to play the Barcelona game. Can't wait. Yeah, that was, you know, you've set things up and you've said, hey guys, you know, Thursdays are going to be you pick days. So we'll rotate around who gets to pick, even like who gets to explain the activity or setting the scores or keeping the scores or making the outcome. So engaging them in the process, there's absolutely no harm in it. I mean, you've guided them towards it. They might even have games and activities, but you know, you want to, depending on the level and so forth, you want to run it past you. But I would say there's huge value in involving them in it. Absolutely can't speak enough of that. But again, it's that philosophical thing that I've got to be comfortable with that. And in the beginning, is it going to go well? Is it going to go as what you would have commanded and controlled it? No, but in the long run, you're going to increase the IQ of the athletes, you know, the science around learning and engagement. It's all there to back up engaging people in the process for sure.
You've got to get your ego out of the way a little bit to allow for it, but you can see how many benefits there are.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, if you really, it takes the pressure off you as the coach hugely. And I mean, in the beginning, it's you say that letting go of the ego is really, really difficult, but now what does that provide you the opportunity to do? You now are looking at the game and all the activities in a completely different role. They're keeping score, they're managing it, they're doing everything. And now you're able to sit back and watch, and you're probably able to see things that you're normally not looking for because you're doing six other things and focusing on it. And it just gives you, it's a bit like just getting a bird's eye view.
John's empowered his athletes so much on this front that he doesn't even go to practice anymore.
I knew a bad joke was coming there.
It's been years.
Well, I'd say with the way he's today, he could probably afford to take the day off here and there because he knows, they know what he would expect, and they'll roll out and do it for him, you know. So I mean, but that's the ultimate thing, right? Okay, what if you lost your voice? What if you're sick? What if you can't be there? What if there's an emergency? I mean, we've done that where we've deliberately, just to see what happens within the culture of the group as well, to see what would happen if we don't show up. And if you have a good system in place where you're good at communicating what's coming up today, how far in advance do you share the practice plan with them, whether it's that you share the full details or you share, hey, we're going to work on A, B, and C, and we're going to do these three activities in this game. Then if you weren't to show up, or you were just, hey, I'm really ill, I'm just going to sit in my beach chair and watch, but this is what I want to have happen, you'll be surprised based on how you've operated and got the team to function that they can actually do a jolly good job without us. I mean, you want to ultimately coach yourself out of a job, really. But again, what I mean by that is that yes, it takes so much weight off your shoulders, and it just gives you the opportunity to literally go sit in the stands and watch, and then it allows you to go to a different level with the group because of what you now see is actually going on by just removing yourself from being pretty close to the center of attention of it all.